This is the second and final call of the coaching program that we had. I got a lot of feedback from the first one. It was all really good, and I hope you guys had a chance to listen to it again. We have most of the people are on. There may be a few stragglers. If not, like Stan said, they can catch up later. And mostly, I'm just going to cover a couple of things. I'm going to dive into the questions. You can ask questions by writing into chat. We see everything you write, so keep it coherent. And if you have any questions at all as we go, let me know, and I will just start talking about what I consider the basics of a good career that starts hot and gets hotter as you go. So let's just dive right in. Those of you who have looked into the freelance manual that I sent to you with the big package, with the care package I sent everyone who signed up, the freelance manual, some people look at it and they think, well, that's pretty simple, that's pretty straightforward, and they kind of glance through it. And that's a big mistake. The freelance manual has been responsible for not only starting people's careers, but helping people who have been in a career that has stagnated, and it's helped them jack the mojo in that situation. And I've even had A-listers read it and say that they learned things that helped them up their the amount of money they're getting paid, help them negotiate better contracts, things like that. The basics of the freelance manual, for those of you who have or haven't looked at it, is very simple. It's three chapters. One is you get good. Two is you get connected, and three is you get paid. That pretty much defines a career. Now, getting good is the big complex one, and we talked about that a lot last time. We can certainly talk some more about that if you have any questions. There's no such thing as a dumb question on these calls, too. This is where you can get all that nagging, all those nagging questions you've had answered by a professional who's been in the game for multiple decades. So the getting good part is, you know, taking classes. You're taking the AWAI classes, I assume. I would suggest you certainly look at the Simple Writing System, my program, certainly following advice from people and just working your magic. A lot of getting good has to do with experience, and I'm going to get into that in a little bit off of a different point. But it's basically you put your time in. You learn the basics. You apply the basics to the early jobs you have. As you get better, you apply more and more advanced stuff, and you just keep moving up the ladder of getting better. You can't start as a rookie and by the following week become an A-list writer, because becoming an A-list writer requires experience, and not just raw experience, but very focused experience where you are applying critical thinking to everything that's happening. You're learning your lessons, you're applying the lessons, and you're seeing what happens, what your personal experience is when you use a certain kind of headline, when you try a certain kind of hook, when you work with a new client in a new market, and you test how good you are at researching new markets. You test how good you are at interviewing the primary people in whatever business you're in, or whatever whoever you need to interview to get the job done, whether it's the client or the secretaries of the client or the feet in the street salesman, or you want to interview people who have sent in testimonials, you want to interview people who are unhappy with the experience. You as a freelance writer come into the position as the adult in the room. You are the person that after you've gotten a lot of experience, you can actually say to a new client, even a client who's been in business and been very successful, you can say, here's what we're going to do. Here's what I'm going to do for you to be able to get the results that you've told me that you wanted. More sales, more customers, you want to branch out, you want to launch something, whatever that is. All of this comes with experience. So getting good is an ongoing process. And you guys, everyone here on the call is doing exactly the right thing you should be doing. Getting information from mentors, teachers, coaches, and even your peers who have discovered something new. The second part is get connected. And that's really the key to advancing a career. Because a really good copywriter, isolated from clients and from his own peer group of other writers, isn't going to do much with his career. The clients often come through the network that you connect to or that you build. And one of the earliest things that I did in my career was to get that network put on steroids. I ruthlessly pursued anyone, anywhere in business that I felt had something I wanted to learn or had information I felt that I could use or that had tips. And sometimes when I'd corner someone, like I worked with Jay Abraham very early on, I would just ask him, what am I not doing right? What in your opinion should I be doing at this stage in my career? And we're talking about the first couple of years of my career, that you think I should be doing that I'm not doing. And he gave me advice. I didn't take all of it, but the half of the advice I did take spurred my career on to amazing heights. So having a good a good networking group or a network of people that you can contact solves almost all problems in any kind of career, no matter what stage you're at in the career. And your network should involve your peers. It should involve teachers, mentors. It have clients belong in that. If you have a good client who knows other clients, they can easily recommend you to other people. You may ask about the ways that he's testing as opposed to the ways that you know how to test. You may learn new ways of that a client has successfully gone out and launched something, or the way he's using email, or the way he's using his online marketing stuff. All of this is stuff you can learn and start to pack away into your bag of tricks. And then the final thing is getting paid. And I think we'll talk about that. Some of the questions that came in were about getting paid. But basically, it's the getting paid part is to match what you bring to the table to what you can produce for the client, and then what's that worth to him. What may be worth $500,000 to one client is only worth 20 grand or 10 grand to another client because of the bottom line. It's not the percentage of the results you get. It's actually the money coming in the door. And this is a tip, by the way, for dealing with clients and dealing with anybody, really. When they start talking in percentages, like, you know, we had 50%, you know, of the list replied to our email blast last night. You know, well, that's great. But if there are only 8 people on the list and you got 4, that, you know, the bottom line is just not that impressive. So try to get both kinds of numbers. In direct mail, people used to live off the idea that 1 to 2% response rate on a direct mail package used to be considered pretty good. But that was all relative even back in the bad old days where direct mail was the only way to go. Because sometimes you could get 50% off of the mailing to a very specific list. So dealing with the percentages is a form of avoiding the truth. And the truth is almost always what's the bottom line in dollar figures. Stan, I can hear you. Are you eating candy out of a candy wrapper? It reminds me of the sitting in the theater with the guy slowly trying to do the candy wrapper thing. Where was I? Okay, get paid. So getting connected, I think, is the thing that almost everyone here on this call really needs to pay attention to. If you haven't reached out to other AWAI people that you've met, all of you are at the event. If you didn't make a bunch of new friends at that event, then that's something you got to do next time. Never go out to lunch with someone you know. We're going to go and just tell war stories and hang out. When you're at an event like that, always go out to eat and hang out with somebody you don't know and do this regularly. Just get into the habit of expanding your network as much as you can. And you have to be prepared to give as well as to take. You can't just say, I need some information. Can you give me this information so that I will increase the value of myself in the marketplace? You have to be able to share. You have to be able to say, you know, let's have a talk when we get back home next week. Let's talk and I'll share what I got out of the AWAI thing and even share any contacts I had. If you'll share with me what you got out and if you'll share any contacts that you got out of that. That's how a network goes from being essentially very small and intimate to being very large and an operative part of your career. So that is the main tactic in any kind of career. I've taught writers who understood that and worked on their network even more than they worked on getting good. Now, they never presented themselves as being more experienced than they were, but it turned out that one of them, for example, I won't name her, but she got right in on the ground floor when Jeff Walker started Launch Formula, and she got involved with a couple of launches, figured out that she could handle the launch herself, that she could write all the emails, she could write all of the materials needed. She knew what was needed because she had participated in just a couple. So she stopped being a supporting actor in launches and became a launch manager who also wrote everything. She was like a one-stop shop. And so she went from being a rookie to being a sought-after, highly paid freelance copywriter for anyone who wanted to do a launch. Didn't matter what market it was in, because that was secondary to understanding how the launch process worked. I know there's a lot of people that have worked with the Walkers, and they talk about understanding a launch process, and it's very good to get connected with that type of stuff. But a lot of this stuff isn't rocket science either. Once you understand how the process works, whether it's merely getting ads up on Facebook or on AdWords, and what to do with those ads, how to channel them, where they're going to go, what kind of page they're going to wind up at, and then how you're going to get people from that page to the order page, and how you're going to process orders. Once you understand that process, you become much more valuable to a client, because you're not just a wordsmith. You're not just somebody coming in and saying, I'll take what you do in your sales copy and I'll make it better because I'm a better writer. I mean, there is room for that type of copywriter in the world. But if you want to move your career up a few levels, you have to bring more to the game. And all that really involves is understanding each part of the game that you're in. So I really wanted to drive that home. So let's get to some of the questions. Pam Shannon, I don't know if she's on the call. I don't have a list of the people on the call. Maybe I do. And Pam's on the call. Very good. She says, John, in your opinion, does AWAI training allow us rookies to bypass some of the learning curve mentioned in your freelance course, i.e., can we immediately write for clients like Boardroom, or should we practice on other clients first? Many thanks for your input. This is an easy question for me to answer, and I've actually come across this many times over my career teaching writers how to get in the game. And basically is, when you get to that A-list level of client, the Boardrooms, the Agoras, in any large corporation that totally understands direct response and has a long history, like Rodale has a long history of successful direct response advertising, if you have to ask yourself if you're ready, you're not. And I strongly recommend that people do not move too fast in this. I've actually counseled writers not to take an offered job from a large company, because I knew, because I was dealing intimately with the writer, I knew they just weren't ready. To be able to understand what the I call it the hierarchy of confidence. And basically, let me see if I've got this written down. The hierarchy of confidence is, you can be a writer and you can understand how to write, but you don't have the actual chops. You haven't actually written ads, or you haven't written successful ads. So you have an idea of how to string sentences together, but you don't quite know what goes into a sales pitch. So there's a certain kind of confidence that comes with that, in that at least you're not worried about being coherent in what you write. But the second level of confidence is being confident with chops. And by chops, I mean knowing that you can actually sit down and write a headline that has a good chance of working. You know the what goes into a sales message, the intro, you know, here's who I am, here's what I have for you, here's what it will do for you, and here's what you should do now. The kind of path of basic direct response. Then there's confidence with chops and experience. And that's what I was talking about. And once you get to that point, then you're not guessing whether or not you can handle a new job that comes in if you've dealt with that kind of client or that client before. In other words, the second job you have with a certain client is like a second date with somebody. They're no longer a stranger. You understand where there may be some sticking points. You may understand, you know, you've gone through getting maybe a letter of agreement or a contract together. You've gotten past all of that first stuff. By the time you're into the fourth, fifth, and sixth job with that client, it's like an old friend. You know exactly what's going on, the good and the bad and the ugly. But that experience is what differentiates you in that second through 10th to 100th job than from the very first job. So once you've dealt successfully with a number of clients in a number of different markets and a number of different situations and catastrophes, then you can take a totally new client, a totally new market, and know that you have conquered it once, twice, two or three times, done that, a new client, new market, and then you can start to branch out and get into new clients with new markets. Now, this helps you get to that point of knowing whether you should accept a job if offered or go after a job if you hear about it with a top client, because you also need some chutzpah with the chops and the experience. You need to be able to walk in and defend what you're doing, because if you go into a company like Boardroom or others where your copy is going to be put under the microscope by a committee, a lot of the stuff is written by committee, until you get to a point where you are a recognized A-list writer and you have the chutzpah to be able to say, no, you're not going to touch my copy. I'm not going to change the headline. I know you and everybody in the office thinks this is the wrong hook or the wrong headline or the wrong way of going about selling this, but you hired me to do the best job I can with my experience and my skills. I am saying that this is the way to go. So that's what an A-list writer brings to the table. A rookie writer or a middling writer or even a veteran writer who hasn't got a lot of experience can't really say that in, for the first time. Being able to say, no, client, you're wrong, you should do it this way, or, you know, to really stand up for what you're doing, you better be sure that what you're defending, that what you've written, that what you've put out there is the one that should go, is the one that should be used. Now, I had a tactic in some of my contracts with clients who questioned what I wrote and didn't want to write what I knew was going to work. And I said, I actually put it into the contract. You have to test any changes you make to my copy with the original manuscript of whatever I write. That's part of it. You can't just say we're going to change the headline a little bit, or we're going to have, you know, the committee wanted to change this or change the price or do change whatever. Because you as a writer will get blamed for anything the committee does. So you have to be in a position to be able to say, no, that's just not going to happen, and either make it stick or have them test against your piece. But you better have the confidence that your piece is going to be the winner, and you get that through experience. And the last part of this is chops, experience, a little chutzpah to be an A-list writer. The last thing is self-knowledge. And that's where it all kind of kicks in, where you're not having to ask, you know, am I ready to work with so-and-so? And after you put in your time and you've got experience and you've been kicked around a little bit and you've learned from your mistakes and you've been able to correct things and you've been through disasters, especially you've been through things where you had to think fast, where you got a phone call at 2 a.m. and you had to just get up from a dead sleep and start writing emails because something happened. And you've got to be, you know, on the ball, and you've got to stay with a launch project. You got to stay with it for a month and a half and you got to keep doing things and massaging things and changing horses midstream. Once you've done that, and know you can do it, and you don't freak out and you don't faint in a panic, then that's good. Then it, once you've done it twice and three times, then you can start saying, I'm experienced at this. Once you become a veteran is when you don't care what's on that 2 a.m. phone call. You've handled something similar, and you know you can handle it. You have the confidence, and you have the self-knowledge. Now, as far as self-knowledge, let's break down what it is you need to know to be able to take a A-list job like that. You should have deadlines down. You should understand what deadlines mean, the difference between a soft and a hard deadline. A soft deadline means if you miss a deadline, okay, that's not good, but nothing drastic is going to happen. There's not going to be an empty page running a magazine. There's not going to be affiliates mailing to a page that doesn't exist online. There's not going to be email sent out to a list talking about something that isn't ready yet. A soft deadline is meeting things like basically, you know, saying, okay, I've got the five emails lined up for the autoresponder. I've got the piece written. We're almost finished on that. I'm on the final edit. And you let them know that you're meeting these soft deadlines. A hard deadline means if you miss that deadline, then affiliates are mailing to a blank page. AdWords are going in and churning up money that's are not going anywhere. The sales page is not up. Your emails are not going out because you didn't write them, that type of thing. And you have to understand why deadlines exist. And they're not just there to bother you. They're there for planning, and they're there for smooth and efficient making things happen. So you need to understand deadlines in a way that a rookie can only intellectually understand deadlines. You need to viscerally understand them. Deadlines need to be a part of your blood flow. Then you have to have proven skill at creating winning pieces. Now, you don't need necessarily to have created winners for those A-list clients like Boardroom. But if you haven't ever worked with a high-end client like that, where there's a lot of mailing going on, where there's a lot at stake, where there's where you're going to be competing against other writers, you better be able to say, I have been in markets where if there was heavy competition, nobody else had been able to make something work, and I made it work. I was able to sneak past the competition and do really well. I was able to take failing businesses and resurrect them. You know, once you get that experience, and that experience is easier to get in the entrepreneurial world than it is just shooting straight off to the A-list world and crossing your fingers. So there's a difference between skill and proven skill. And you get that again through experience. You also have to have your negotiating skills down. You have to have negotiated with good, bad, and crazy clients. You have to understand when they're, you know, have a good idea of when a client is lying to you, when a client is exaggerating, or when a client has no intention of meeting whatever promises he's made. Or you have to get a feel for that. Not that the A-list clients are liars and thieves, but they do negotiate at a very, very high level. You don't just go in and say, well, what'd you pay Ben Zavinga for the last piece? Just pay me that and we'll be square. It doesn't work that way. They may lowball you. They may have a policy of only paying very little for the first piece, and you may have to decide whether that's something you want to do or not. Because writing for a top client may take you 2 months of working on it all the time and really concentrating on that one job for 2 months. Are you prepared to do that? Do you understand what goes into that? And also I mentioned you have to have experience with writing by committee. Very, very different than dealing with an entrepreneurial client where the guy you're talking to is actually the guy who signs the checks, who makes the decisions, who makes the approval or not. That's a lot different than dealing with a committee who doesn't write checks, who maybe sees the boss who does write the check, or at least whose signature goes on the checks, maybe sees them once a month. And you're dealing with people who aren't necessarily going to lose their jobs if if what they tell you to do. They may tell you to do something and you not having the experience may say, okay, if they said it, they work for the guy, so I'll go do what they said to do. And you do it, you're going to get blamed if it doesn't work. They're not. You can't say, well, Joe in marketing told me that that was the way to go, so I used his idea. That doesn't work. That doesn't fly when you're working for A-list clients. I actually had an experience with, I worked for Rodale, I've written for Boardroom, Phillips, multiple, I wrote for Agora back in the 80s. I only had one really bad experience, and that was when one of the higher-ups in marketing questioned a word in the headline I was using. I can't remember the exact headline, but I think the word was, I wanted to say, secrets stolen from the wealthiest investors in the country, something like that. And he just spent a long time being really upset about the word stolen, wanted to use borrowed or something much, much weaker, a non-power word. I finally had to give in because the piece wasn't going to get mailed. I gave in, the piece rocketed to the floor as a bomb. And I took the heat, and it was a lesson that I, even as I agreed with the guy to go ahead and change the word, I, in the back of my head, this voice was saying, don't do it, it's a big mistake, and this will not go well, and it didn't. So that, however, we all need lessons like that throughout our career to remind us why we have these basic principles that we stick by and these basic manners of going through any kind of process. I made a note down here. So much goes into an A-level piece. You should probably wait to be asked or recommended to write for them. In other words, don't push to get a job with Boardroom or somebody if you have any questions in your mind about whether you can handle it or not. And even if you are asked or recommended by somebody, really pay some critical attention to whether or not you want to go through that. Really go through the process. I, for example, recently turned down a job with I won't name the company, but it was another A-list place. And I was thinking about doing it because I have writers that I work with that actually do the grunt work. But through my network, getting back to being connected, I went straight to another A-list writer who has worked for years with this very company. And I said, what's it like working with them? What's the prices that they pay? How long does it take? And you know, would you rate it, you know, 10 or 1 on a scale of are they a pain to work with or not? And he said he works with them. He knows how it works and he's able to do it. But it can take a month to 2 months to get something done that should be done in a week. He and I, both being writers, we knew there wasn't that much that went into the job. So after I was thinking about it, I turned down the job because I knew, I got from the horse's mouth, from a writer's opinion, what it was like to actually work there, what the process was going through. And I ran that through my little gauntlet of, do I really want to do this or not? And the answer was no, as it frequently is. When you have the luxury of turning down jobs, you start to be able to get really, really good jobs. Because sometimes taking a job like that that you don't like, you're going to be uncomfortable in, it's going to be a pain. Then you can't take any other jobs while that's happening. So you actually cut yourself off from other opportunities. So there's a bit of a managing the game as you're going. All right, I spent a lot of time on that. So let's get to our old friend Carol Parks had some good questions. Number one, you've mentioned negotiating a percent of sales in our copywriting fees. What is the easiest, simplest way to do that? And how do you handle it if the client balks or resists? Well, this gets back to confidence. If you are confident enough to know that whatever you produce for a new client or even a client you've had for a while is going to be a winner or has a good shot at being a winner, then like a lot of the A-list writers that I've mentored under it early in my career, like Jim Rutz, Steve Barwick, Jay Abraham, Gary Halbert, they would sometimes take jobs for free based on them getting a huge percentage of the gross that came in. Never the net, always the gross. That's explained in the freelance manual. So you can say, look, I'm so confident I can make this work. Thank you for the opportunity for having to do this. Let me clear the decks. I'll do this and I will write it for free. However, when I win, or if I win, I am going to want 5 to 10 to 15 to 20%. Figure it out. 5% of gross in a direct response project can be up to 20% of the profits, which would be the net. So when you say, I mean, 5% of say $100,000 project that brings in $100,000, and you get 5%, so you get $5,000. That doesn't seem like much until you see what the client is getting. If the client may use half of that, goes right off to affiliates, then all of his operating expenses. And I often made more than the client just by getting the percentage, especially when I was getting a percentage plus a fee up front. So once you're confident, a lot of these problems go to the side because you're able to take more of the risk on. And Jim Rutz was the first guy I met, and he was working with, I believe it was Boardroom, and he decided that he went from getting, I believe, $100,000, and this is like in 1988, he would get $100,000 to write a piece. Then he started inventing these ways of putting percentages in. He was one of the first guys to do this. And he started asking a nickel a package in direct mail. Well, that doesn't work when you're online. But then he would negotiate depending on how much they were going to mail. That was really good, by the way, a per package mail, because only winning packages get mailed over and over again. But he also went with percentages. And before we kind of everybody settled on the 5%, people experimented with 2%, 10%, 15%. People experiment a lot. But he went, and I was very impressed. I was ghostwriting for him at this time. I was actually writing the packages that were going out, but he was getting all the money. He paid me $2,000 to write the package, and he was getting $100,000. The next package he negotiated was for nothing up front, and I don't remember. I think it was close to 10%, somewhere between 5 and 10%. He just wanted beginning immediately with the tests. So it was like, you pay me nothing to write for you. And I wrote the package, actually. But once this thing kicks in, you are then paying me from day one. And that turned out to be a lot more than $100,000. And because a control can last for months and even years. And if they're mailing aggressively, if it's working really well and they're bringing in high quality customers and filling their list with good prospects for back ends and stuff, and you become you are not a drag on the bottom line by collecting a lot of money. You are actually a boon to the bottom line, and that's when A-list writers started collecting all these large fees and percentages. I don't know how some of the writers that you people know now. I'm not sure how Clayton works. I'm not sure how. I do know how some of the other A-list writers work, and it's usually a combination of a fee, which is kind of a guaranteed draw against the percentage that they will then get. So as long as the piece mails, they're getting checks for the piece, and that's a good way to do this. Secondary question here is, besides negotiating a percent of sales, what else do you suggest to best leverage the writer's time? So we're not simply trading hours for dollars. We get back to experience, folks. Know what goes into a winning piece, both time-wise, hassle-wise, and work-wise. How much time did it take you to write the last winning piece you had? How much of that time was spent in a cold sweat wondering if you're ever going to come up with a hook that works? How much of it was just editing and actually having kind of fun juicing up the word choices in a piece that was already pretty good? How much of it was spent dealing with a client who was batshit crazy and just a drag on your existence? So you price accordingly, figuring out how much time you actually spend on pieces. And there are easy pieces that you know you're going to write that'll take you a couple of days, maybe even an evening. And then there are pieces that will take you a month or weeks or even longer, because you got to do a lot of research, you got to put a lot of time in. So figure out what you got paid finally, both your fees, whatever percentages you negotiated, whatever else came in as cash to you, and figure out how much time you spent on it and how much an hour essentially you got. You never want to charge by the hour, but you do want to know what you're working for by the hour. So if you're typically spending, you know, 100 hours on a piece and you make 100 grand, then you're making, what, $1,000 an hour. If you're putting 100 hours into something and you make $500, then you're really cheating yourself. That's why some writers will take on smaller jobs, but they'll keep their fees high, because the bottom line is, even for a small business, if they nail a better piece, it's going to bring in more money and it makes sense to them. I kind of figured flat, you know, $1,000 an hour is a nice place to start. It can go up. You don't need to, but I know writers who are certainly worth that. When they do consulting, they get actually less than that for consulting. Some get more than that for consulting hours. But they have an idea of how much time it's going to take. Now, I've been talking about experience so much, it just occurs to me, I hope I'm not scaring anybody off. You can start amassing experience really fast. And if you've read the freelance manual, you would know that I have a couple of different stages. I think I call it shameless whore, where you just take every single job you can, regardless of pay, and actually do jobs for free, because you want to understand what it's like to actually deal with somebody who wants something done, get it done, see how they act, see how grateful they are, see if they live up to their promises, get through that working with client stuff. Then you want to become to a, you know, a dangerous rookie, where you're kind of a danger to everyone, including yourself, but you don't present yourself otherwise, but you're getting experience. And I got so much experience in the first 3 to 6 months when I started my career from scratch. I was just going out and just blundering into the advertising world, but I learned everything and I kept journals. And so for me, one job, whether it went well or whether it went bad, was like a graduate level course in salesmanship, in dealing with clients, in understanding myself and my ability to meet deadlines and come up with hooks, and how fast I could research things and all of this. So by the time I had done 20 jobs, I was well into being a freelancer whose name was being passed around among the agencies in Los Angeles as a guy who got things done, did what he said he was going to do, produce good work. They didn't really test that much, and a lot of the stuff, even though it was direct response, it wasn't like the cutthroat direct response where they test and do A/B splits and things like that. So the results were just whether the client liked the piece or not. A lot of agencies work that way, but you can get all this experience very, very quickly. And I hope you're all keeping really good journals about what each client was like, what problems. You can just number everything out. Just go back through your, all of your clients. Client number one, do you remember him? What were his problems? What was good about him? What was bad about him? What did you learn by dealing with him? Client number two, the same thing, answer all that stuff. And just do that as you go. And the job, what did I learn from the job? Well, I didn't know as much about accounting as I thought I did, so I had to research it by going here. And I found a great site for accountants, blah, 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 and you write all this stuff down, because you're not going to remember a lot of it. And pretty soon things will start to blur together. So your career is a self-feeding learning project, and the experience comes very, very quickly. Then there's another question here. Is there a best or optimal point in a copywriting career to venture into the info marketing business? And how do you make that leap to create multiple streams of income without burning out trying to do that and keep clients happy? Well, the answer to the first part, is there an optimal point in a freelance career? No, basically. It's you move according to, this is where that self-knowledge part of the confidence hierarchy comes in. You move according to what you're good with. If you're a slow learner, and I'm kind of a slow learner, I'm a slow reader. I took a speed reading course, and it only kind of got me up to normal speeding reads. But I have high comprehension. So I take that into account when I got to read something. So I know that when I skim, I don't skim blindly. I skim with purpose and I skim critically. You have to know how you work all of this stuff too. So as far as getting into the info marketing, there's nothing special about the information marketing business. There's nothing special about the financial market. There's nothing special about any of the markets out there, except for the size of the list, the amount of competition, the quality and experience of the other writers you're going to be going up against. So it's kind of like there's no difference between a little league baseball player who's 12 years old and a professional baseball player who's 28 and at the peak of his game facing down 100-mile-an-hour fastballs, except for the experience, the skill level, and the slight changes in the game. Sometimes, things get faster, heavier, a little bit harder as they go, but it's still the same game. So for writing, it's, writing for an A-list client or writing for an entrepreneur who has a pizza stand on the corner in New York City and you're going to write flyers for them, it's still the basics of direct response advertising. And every time you work with that, you start to learn how there's that pizza stand has more in common with IBM than it does, than there are differences, really. They're trying to reach somebody and have them make a decision to buy their stuff and not the other guy's pizza or computer. A lot of the freelance career will be two steps forward, one back, sometimes one step forward, three back, sometimes one step sideways, one back, one forward, and then another one sideways. You have to be able to roll with the punches. That's the great thing about a freelance career, is that you can get multiple streams of income coming in if you start to work percentage deals. You can, when you're getting a percent, you're actually kind of a partner, kind of a virtual partner in a business, because you are concerned with the bottom line. A lot of the top writers will continue massaging and working with a control that they've written years afterwards because they don't want the control to tire out. So if it starts to get tired and they have a good relationship with the client will say, "It's getting tired, Bob." Bob will come over and redo the headline or redo the offer or redo whatever they have to do, massage it, re-edit it, spruce it up, to be able to keep it as the control. And they do that because they're getting a percentage. That's what the percentage buys the client, is continued concern about the success of the piece or the ad or the project. Once you have, it's a fine day in a freelancer's career when you've got five or six projects that you only need to pay a few hours attention to each month or each year, and it's bringing in a fine check every month. That's a really good way of having multiple streams of income. You can have some businesses on the side. You can have things you want to for multiple streams of income. You want to put as little effort and work into them as possible after the initial, blitzkrieg of effort and work and doing things. You want to do some maintenance on it. I actually have ads, as I said, if you heard my speech at AWAI, I have ads that are now 20 years old. I'm still getting a check every month on them because that's the arrangement I made. It was a 5% deal with the client. These ads have survived through magazines, through mail, through becoming websites, to becoming VSLs. And they've just moved right along with almost no changes whatsoever to the copy, and those are essentially multiple streams of income. The more of those I have out, it's really odd to have a piece last that long, but it's also not something you can't do. Start thinking about the future of all of your stuff, what the residual value of any ad that you have. Would it work for another client? If you wrote it, it's your ad. You can change it and use it with another client. That's certainly fair. You can, become a teacher eventually. There's a lot of other things you can do, create things. But think about multiple streams of income as a way to solidify your monthly income or your yearly income, so you are never panicked. One of the things I talk about, I think, in Kick-Ass Copywriting Seekers is the screw you money, how it will change your life if you put aside 3 months to a year's worth of money somewhere. So you know that if you turn down a client who is bad or evil or crooked or you don't want to work with, if you turn them down, you're still going to make the rent. You're still going to, you have a cushion. And I explain that enough in those pieces. I don't need to explain it here. So as far as working with clients, as far as keeping clients happy, and this is the final thing I want to talk about, don't put too much weight on whether the client is happy or not. Most of the clients that I've made the most money for have never been happy with the ads I've written. They stayed up all night when it mailed or went into a magazine piece, terrified of what the response was going to be. They would beg me to change, you know, parts of the ad and stuff. Anytime I had a client say, "I really like that ad, can't wait to mail it," I knew it was probably going to bomb. Because a happy, confident client with something you produce means you just made him happy. That doesn't mean you've made anyone else happy, including the prospects who are going to become the customers. So the client is good, and I've actually become friends with clients. I mean, but they're only human beings. They're running a business. They are blinded by a lot of different things in their position. Most often, they're blinded to what really will sell whatever it is they have. So when you come in, you should judge clients harshly. They're not magical. There's nothing different about them. You guys all know that there's nothing different about any customer list out there. The worst thing you can hear from a client is they say, "Well, my clients are different than everyone else in the market," or blah, blah, blah. It's never true. And it's also not true that clients are a little different. No matter how wealthy they are, no matter how long they've been successful, judge them harshly and keep replacing the bad clients with better clients until you get to a point where you have a stable of really good clients that you can work for that will use you regularly. That's a very nice position for a writer to be in. There's no lack of clients out there. The business world is starving to death for even basic, good, direct response advertising. They don't know, most clients, even large businesses that have creative staffs on board, they have writers, they have graphic designers, they have VPs of creative. A lot of them don't even understand what's going on. The number of top writers who really understand the game is just a handful in the world. It's always been this way. Then there's a large group of writers, mostly freelance writers, who are good enough to walk in and know what's what. And those are the most valuable foot soldiers in the business world. You can go in and say, "I can give you a good direct response of sales message that will bring in whatever you want. It'll bring in leads. It will bring in sales. It will get a project moving. It will resuscitate a lagging project." You can do almost anything, the power of the pen. Clients are not well equipped to appreciate that. They don't understand writing. They don't know what you do. Often it's like magic to them. And if it works, great, you're a great guy. If it fails or stumbles or something goes sideways, then you're a bad person and they go and hire someone else and they want to just throw money at the problem. And a good client will work with you. He's not just throwing money at the problem. He understands that you become a virtual partner in the project where your interests are aligned with his, because the more he makes, the more you're going to make. And the bigger checks that he writes to you, that means he's made a lot more money. So finding those clients who understand that, they're kind of rare, but those are the ones you want to keep working towards getting. I think that's a good place to stop. That's a good overview. Are there any questions? I can see you're writing, guys. No one has checked in, so I'm going to assume you're all fine. I'll give you 1 minute to see if anybody has a question that I need to clarify. And otherwise, we're done here, folks. I certainly hope you're all great info. Okay, good. I hope you've had a chance to go through all this stuff. That pile of books and courses that I sent to you should be dog-eared by now. If it's not, then make that one of your prime New Year's resolutions. Be sure to check out the January blog post I put up, which will be at john-carlton.com. I always put up one called the January 15th letter. I won't explain it here because it's explained in that post. And that has changed a lot of people's lives. So be sure to check the blog. I also want to remind you to look at the simple writing system that we offer. I'll be sending you an email with more information about it. I would be quite willing to put together a special class if we have enough people from this group that want to take it. I've got a special writer who's been teaching the course since the very beginning when we first put it together. So expect another email. I'll explain the details on that. Stan just chimed in. Stan, did you have something to say about this? Okay, maybe Stan didn't chime in. Sorry. All right, somebody said all this makes sense. Very good. Glad to see that you're doing this. MRIC, the membership site, just enormous amounts of value there. So I hope you all intend to stay on there. I've been frequently in there answering questions and moving along. So I think we're done. It seems like you guys still need a little time to gel on a lot of this stuff, so I don't want to overwhelm you. I think a lot of the writing stuff, the get good stuff, can be solved with the simple writing system. We've put through over 1,000 people, both entrepreneurs and professional writers. We use professional teachers when we do the classes. It is a life-changing course, especially for a writer who has reached a plateau or suspects that there's a whole other world above him in the levels above where you're at. If you can just get that much better where you totally understand the process of direct response advertising. It's a very quick course to get through, though we give it weeks to do it so it sticks. And like I say, I'll be sending you stuff. So very good. It wasn't a lot of interaction here, but that's because I think a lot of you were just listening, and I was on a pretty good roll. So love to hear feedback from you guys if you have any, and I hope you have a great holiday and that you begin the new year armed with all of this new information and you actually put your career on steroids. So Stan, if you can hear me, we're going to sign off now, and that's the call. And thanks a lot, guys. Bye-bye.